That's where Prabhupada stayed at the Radha-Damodar temple before he came to America. He stayed at the Radha-Damodar temple. So you'll see his rooms there when you go. And on the altar, Radha-Damodar. And you, if you go during the Kartik month, Kartik is the same month, if you go during the Kartik month, ask the pujaris. Remember, when you go, you want to see the rope from Radharani's waist tied around Damodar. For the whole month, they do that at the temple. Okay. What about you? Have you learned now? Philosophical descriptions, and I might lose at least two of the audience here if I continue reading. So I think I'll kind of modify it, things a little bit. Summarize first the section of Srimad Bhagavatam is Canto 10, Chapter 9. That's the Damodar Lila. And you know the basic idea of the Damodar Lila. Krishna is 3 years old, and he has the focus when he's in his childhood pastimes is stimulating or nourishing the parental affection of the elders in Braja. They have their own sons and daughters and things, but their affection for Krishna is even greater than for their own sons and their own daughters, because they're pure devotees and they have that kind of affection for him. So when he's performing childhood pastimes, it describes in chapter 8, he learns to crawl. And the way it describes it, he doesn't go in a straight line, he goes zigzag, walking this way, walking that way, crawling. And his brother, Balaram, is just some 7-8 days older than him. Balaram is born of Mother Rohini, and Krishna is acting as the son of Yashoda. So they're of the same age, they're maturing in the same stage, the same way. And once they learn how to crawl, sometimes they hear the tinkling of the ankle bells of some of the elders, and they think it's their mother. So they go crawling after them. And then when they realize it's not their mother, they become frightened and go running or crawling back, scurrying back to Mother Jasoda's lap and Rohini's lap, and they embrace their sons out of affection. Sometimes they go to the pasturing ground and they see calves standing there, and they pull on the tail of the calf. And the calf gets startled and starts to run, and they hold on to the tail. And they're being dragged through the pasturing ground by the startled calf. And some of the ladies are, oh no, we may be in trouble. And some of the ladies are laughing. Some are clapping. Some are various emotions of enjoying Krishna's childhood pastimes. And many other childhood pastimes. Then he learns to walk. He learns to walk long before most children in their developmental stage learn to walk. And as soon as he learns to walk, you know what he does? He goes to steal butter. Makhanchor, one of Krishna's names. Like Damodar is one of Krishna's names. But Makhanchor is one of Krishna's names. And there's details and details and details and details described when the elder ladies come to Mother Jasoda's home and say, you know what? your son comes into our homes and he steals butter and yogurt. Or he goes to the storeroom and steals butter and yogurt. And if he can't find any butter and yogurt, you know what he does? He goes into the back room and pinches the babies and they start to cry and then he runs away. And he finds so many clever ways. Mother DeSoto said, why don't you just, you have so much dairy products, just give him some. We try, but he doesn't want that. He wants to steal. And they describe the various ways, how clever he is in finding different ways to steal. And Krishna's sitting there in the room while they're talking, and he's looking at Mother DeSoto, looking at them with fearful eyes, like he's a little boy, maybe he's going to get punished for his mischief. But you know what? Mother DeSoto just embraces him and says, oh, Paul, why do you do things like this? She has so much affection. And the ladies that are saying these things, they're not angry. They're laughing and smiling. And sometimes they clap and Krishna will dance. Sometimes they sing and Krishna will dance. Sometimes they say, pick up some object over there, see that stick, and Krishna will go pick up the stick and bring it to them and smile, and they'll smile. Loving. Sometimes something too heavy for him to lift, and Krishna will go over and just touch it, look at them and smile. Because he can't talk yet. He can't say, I can't lift it. But they understand it. So there's a whole section of his childhood pastimes of loving dealings with the elders of Vrindavan. But one of the things that Krishna wanted was specifically from his mother was the affection of being admonished, scolded. But she didn't. So then he did something that would cause her to scold him. He ate dirt. That pastime, right? So Krishna said, I didn't eat dirt. My friends, they're liars. And Mother DeSoto said, why would they lie? They're your friends. And even your brother, he said, so if you didn't eat dirt, open your mouth. So Krishna opened his mouth and she saw what she saw. And we're going to be discussing that pastime, because it's from chapter 9. There's reference to it in chapter 9. And when she saw the whole universe with all of its details, the elements and mountains and stars and rivers and living entities and everything. And there he is, sitting in her lap, and she's seeing the universe inside him, which means she had the universe in her lap. The universe on her lap? Not possible, right? But she saw. So it was a display of his amazing potency to overwhelm her feelings of love. And she thought this and this emotion, that emotion, the other emotion, and finally she just said, whoever he is, whatever happened, he's my child and I have to feed him. And she just got immersed in parental affection. So chapter 9 opens with Krishna wanted to have her scold him, and she didn't do it yet. So he did something so she would scold him. Because, not just like he was, like, it's a particular kind of affection, an intense kind of affection of mother towards a child, where the mother does what she does, a loving mother does what she does because of affection. And he wanted that particular variety of affection. He wanted to be controlled by her love. That's what he wanted. He is the supreme controller. We have this nice verse from Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So the first line is Ishvara Parama Krishna. Ishvara means controller, and Parama means supreme. There's many controllers. Like, you know, you controlled your shoes when you came to greet us. You took them off, but then you went to get them again. So you have control of your shoes. And each of us has some control of something. But there's someone that controls us, and there's someone that controls that person, there's someone that controls that person. But there's one person that has no control, but he's the controller of all controllers. That's Ishvara Parama. That's Krishna. But Krishna wanted to be controlled by Mother Yashoda, by her love, not twist his arm, by love. And so he enacted a pastime to be controlled by her love. And the way the story goes at the beginning of the chapter, it was Diwali. Here's some nice forms of Sita, Ram, Lakshman, and Hanuman. And the Diwali day is when Ram returns back to Ayodhya after being in exile for 14 years. And it's at night, so they have all the lights in the whole of Ayodhya as Ram is coming on this Vimana, or a mystical aircraft. Pushpaka Vimana, it's called. So Diwali occurs during this month of Kartik, same month that we're in. So on that particular day, it's a big festival day. So Mother Yashoda said, you know what? My son, they say my son is stealing butter and yogurt. And if it's true, it's because the people who are assisting me to make butter for Krishna, they don't know what they're doing. They don't do it nicely. So I'm going to do it myself. And she had very special cows. Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. That's a lot of cows. Ooh, 900,000. And of those, there's groups of cows that were special, and she had, without all the detail, she had special 7 or 8 cows that were very, very special cows, and she knew which grasses to feed to which cows that would make which flavored milk. So ahead of Diwali, she fed the cows, and then she personally milked the cows. And then she was preparing butter and milk sweets for Krishna herself. You know the story, right? Sanati, you know the story? She's smiling. Now you know the story, anyway. So she was churning butter. You can churn butter from milk, but you make better butter if you churn butter from yogurt. What to speak of Mother Yashoda's yogurt. So she was churning away. There was a rope. The churning rope is wrapped around a vertical stick. And if you go this way and go that way, the stick moves. And the stick at the bottom has little paddles, pieces of wood that stick out like spokes. And it makes the yogurt in the yogurt pot slosh around. And by movement back and forth and back and forth, it eventually becomes butter. I did it. It's nice. We did it right in one of our temples. That, you know, works. She was making butter. And as she was making butter, she was singing songs about Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's qualities and Krishna's form. And she loved Krishna. She was just singing about Krishna. And Krishna was in another room over there. Early in the morning, he was asleep. Little boy, 3-year-old boy, asleep. You're tired already? No. Tired? Not. Okay. Krishna was tired. Krishna was sleeping. Krishna was sleeping. She said, whatever she wants to do. Krishna was sleeping. And he woke up. And when he woke up, when little three-year-old children wake up, not always, but often it means they're hungry. So when he was hungry, he toddled over to where Mother DeSoto was and looked at her, and she's smiling and churning butter for Krishna. He just reached out and grabbed a hold of the stick that was she was using for churning, and she smiled because she knew what that meant. He couldn't speak. Probably could speak, but he didn't speak. He just held the stick. And that meant stop this and feed me. I'm hungry. So she dropped the rope and stopped churning butter and put Krishna on her lap. She's looking, his legs are like this. She's holding his back like that. And she's smiling at him. And when Krishna sees Mother Yashoda smile at him, he smiles. And when he smiles, her smile gets even bigger. When her smile gets even bigger, Krishna's smile gets even bigger. And it has a smiling competition. She was in spiritual ecstasy. So then she began feeding Krishna. But over there, she saw on the stove, there was some milk that was boiling. And it was really special milk. It was that special milk that she personally fed the special grass to the special cows and milked the cows. And she was making milk sweets. And so she decided, we sometimes have several things we have to do at the same time. It happens. And you have to make a decision, which is what you're going to do first. So she made a decision to rescue the milk, because it was really special milk and it's for Krishna. And she would come back and continue feeding Krishna when she came back. But the milk would be spoiled. So she left, she set Krishna down, went to take care of the milk, and Krishna didn't like that. I mean, Krishna's in Mother Yashoda's heart, and he inspired her to go do what she did. But he also wanted the rest of the Leela to happen. So he was as if angry. And when he gets angry, look out. So he took a stone and threw the stone very expertly, this three-year-old boy, broke the pot with a clay pot, and the yogurt started oozing out all over the ground. And then Krishna went off to the storeroom to steal butter that was made yesterday. He knew exactly where to go, and he went, and he grabbed the whole pot of butter and yogurt and took it outside the storeroom to the front yard, well, the gate, towards the front gate, outside the house. Mother DeSoto came back. Mother DeSoto saw the broken pot, the yogurt all over the place, the stone. And she concluded, this must be Krishna's doing. And she smiled. And she followed the little footprints of Krishna leading into the storeroom. And she saw there was a pot of the butter that was churned yesterday missing. She continued and saw him outside. And so she, quiet, on her tiptoes, snuck. Krishna saw her coming. And he fearfully was looking this way, looking that way. And he got up and he started running, little three-year-old boy running. And Mother DeSoto started running after him. Now the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, says the great yogis, they try to capture Krishna in their meditation, and they can't. But Mother DeSoto, she's not an ascetic yogi. She's a mother. But she caught him from behind. Krishna means Krishna let her catch him. And when she took him by the arm, he started crying. He was thinking, I'm going to get it. But he wanted all this to happen. This is a pastime that he enacted so that he would feel those feelings, and Mother Jasoda would do what Mother Jasoda did. So when she saw him crying, she had a little skinny stick called a lathi, like a pencil, you know, it's really skinny. And he saw the stick, and he was crying, looking at the stick, rubbing his eyes, tears going down his cheeks. So she threw away the stick. And then she considered, she's so afraid, maybe he'll run away into the forest. There's animals in the forest, and I have to protect him from that danger. So she then wanted to tie him up so he wouldn't run away and get hurt by some animals out in the forest. So that's where we are. Chapter 9, text 13 and 14. I'm going to read the translation, I hope. Now, a lot of this is describing the transcendental nature of Krishna's form. And that's not easy to understand because we're used to forms that are material. You know, they take birth, they grow, they last for some time, some byproducts or offspring are produced, there's some aging, and then death. Those six transformations are common. But Krishna doesn't have a material body. Although he has no material body, he makes an appearance as if he has a body, but it's not a material body, it's not a physical body, it's a spiritual body. So here's the verse that's helping us to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's form and this exchange with Mother Jasoda, which is also a transcendental loving exchange. Here's the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading. Because he is not under the influence of the element of time, for him, there's no difference between past, present, and future. He exists in his own transcendental form at all times, being absolute, beyond relativity. He is free from distinctions between cause and effect. Although he is the cause and effect of everything, that unmanifested person who is beyond the perception of the senses has now appeared as a human child. And Mother Yashoda, considering him her own ordinary child, bound him to the wooden mortar with a rope. That's the verse that we're reading commentary on. And references made to that those two verses, 13-14, from Krishna speaking, who, you know who Vasudeva and Devaki are? You do. Who are they? Yeah. Very good. Your mother taught you all these things, huh? Yeah? Good. No kidding. Very good. You're lucky. You're really fortunate. I wish I had known those things when I was your age. would have saved a lot of trouble. Okay, so Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, and they saw, Vasudeva and Devaki saw. Vasudeva offered prayers, Devaki offered prayers, now Krishna is speaking to both of them. He says, I have shown you this form, Vasudeva and Devaki, so that you will remember my previous appearances before you. He appeared two other times. This was his third time as their son, previous lifetimes. You would not understand my birth if I appeared in my human-like form. So there's he has a human-like form, and he has this forearm form, but it's his form. This is a lot of technical subject matter for, you know, little children aren't going to be able to follow it so well. The main thing that's being said in the commentary is his form, this both the forearm form and the two-arm form are their forms of Krishna, but this forearm form is not his principal form. He says, I'm showing you this forearm form, which is not my principal form, so you won't make the mistake of thinking I'm just your little boy. Because here I am, forearms, full stature, crown, ornament. That's not normally how a little child is born. So if I appeared as a small child, human-like child, you wouldn't understand my divinity. So I appeared in this form, which isn't my original form, so that you'll understand I fulfilled my promise. You wanted me as your son. You wanted Vishnu as your son. Here I am. I fulfilled my promise. In a later section of the Bhagavatam, you probably know this one too. Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys and put them in a cave. That one. And then he comes back and he sees what he saw. He saw all the calves and cowherd boys, and then they transformed into forms of Narayan, etc. And then they all disappeared. So Brahma's offering prayers. Chapter 14, Canto 10, he says, Brahma says to Krishna, have you not shown me today that both you yourself and everything within this creation are manifestations of your inconceivable potency? First, you appeared alone, and then you manifested yourself as all of Vrindavan's calves and cowherd boys, your friends. Next, you appeared as an equal number of four-handed Vishnu forms who were worshipped by all living beings, including me. He saw him worshipping Krishna. And after that, you appeared as an equal number of complete universes. Finally, you have now returned to your unlimited form as the Supreme Absolute Truth. So we read that this morning. And I'm going over what we read this morning, which isn't good. So let's go forward. In that same chapter, 14, that's Brahma's prayers to Krishna. He says to Krishna, oh, Krishna, subduer of Maya, appearing in this incarnation, you manifested the whole universe in your abdomen to your mother, even though it was clearly visible externally as well. So there's the universe, and there's the universe. How did that happen? By his inconceivable potency. So commentary reads, your expansion was not in the water. So when Krishna expands himself for the purpose of creation of the universe, there is Mahavishnu, You know these three? Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu. You know these? No. Mahavishnu generates the universes from his body. Mahavishnu. And those universes float on the water, the causal ocean. And then that Mahavishnu expands himself within each universe as another Vishnu, called Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu. That's Vishnu number two. Vishnu number one, Mahavishnu. Vishnu number two, he enters into each universe. And then in each universe, half of the universe fills with water. That's the reference here to water. Your expansion was not in the water. He's Krishna standing before Brahma. And was not the embodiment of the universe. So he showed the universe within himself, but he's not the universe. You are the example of this. In three verses, Brahma explains that Krishna is the supreme form using a descriptive method of expression. O Lord, destroyer of Maya, you cannot tolerate relationship with matter. That is, it's like a duck and water. You know that? You've seen ducks before, right? Ducks, birds swim in the water. Okay. So if you put water on the back of a duck, what happens? Just rolls off the duck. Doesn't go in. So the material energy is like water on a duck's back. Krishna is not affected by the material elements. Although he appears here, he's not affected by anything. We're affected because we're tiny, but not Krishna. He's not affected. You, Brahma saying to Krishna, you removed Maya from Agasura. You know the story. The big serpent, the cowherd boys went into Agha's mouth. So Krishna took away Maya from Agha. He's not affected by Maya, and he brings other people, other souls, to the position where they're also not affected by Maya, because he's supremely pure. That is proper, since you are the supreme as Swayam Bhagavan. Okay. There's a lot of this technical stuff. I don't know what to do because of our audience here. There's reference to a verse in, you know what Bhagavad Gita is, right? Krishna speaks to Arjuna, right? Krishna speaks to Arjuna. There's another section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna speaks to his dear friend Uddhava. Uddhava. Uddhava is Krishna's dear friend also. So there's a long section in the 11th canto Bhagavatam called Uddhava Gita. There's Bhagavad Gita and there's Uddhava Gita. So Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita, and he says, the yogi who places his mind in my form of Narayana, full of all opulences, becomes endowed with my nature, and thus obtains the mystic perfection of Vashita. So mystic powers. You've heard of mystic powers. Mystic powers. So that this is how the yogis do. That's how they get their mystic powers. They fix their mind completely upon Narayana. And he's, because he's full of opulences and full of potencies, they become endowed with potencies and qualities like Narayana. And then they can do mystic things by his potencies. There's more to be said. There's some technical things I'm leaving out. So Brahma is saying to Krishna, you revealed your Maya by showing the externally manifested universe to your mother within your abdomen. That's yoga maya. There's the maya of, you know, illusion in the material sense of illusion, and there's the spiritual sense that Krishna showed the whole universe outside and inside at the same time. The whole universe inside Krishna's mouth. Even a little boy. The whole universe. When Krishna's name-giving ceremony took place, there's a ritual. After a child is born within a certain period of time, a Brahmin looks at the horoscope chart of the child, and based upon what they see, they then give a name for the child. So that happened with Krishna and Balaram. Garga Muni was the person. And he says in that chapter 8, This comes later. This is Mother Jasoda, pardon me. This is Mother Jasoda, after seeing the universe inside Krishna's mouth, she goes, wow. Has this been manifested by bewilderment of my intelligence by the demigods? Or is it some natural power of my child? So she's bewildered. And is the cause of my bewilderment, is it just the demigods did something mystical? But no, because I'm not so important. Why are the demigods going to bother with me? And have I kind of gone mad and I'm just like in delusion seeing things? Or is there actually some power within my child that is showing me things? So all of this was confusing her. And the confusing of her, both to see the universe and the confusion, was a manifestation of Krishna's potencies, his achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. Then reference to this evening verse comes. Shukadeva Goswami says, thinking of the invisible Lord, who has no inside or outside, has nothing previous or after him, who existed in the past and will exist in the future, inside and outside of the universe, who is the universe, as her son, as Mother Jasoda's son, appearing with a human form, although he was beyond material senses, Jasoda tied him to the mortar like a normal child with rope. So it's kind of like Mission Impossible, because he doesn't have a spiritual form. So how do you use something material to tie up a spiritual form? Or how can you use a rope to go around something that can contain the whole universe? What's a rope that's big enough to go around the universe? No such thing. It's impossible. But she did it. Because she's really powerful. Her power is her love. So Krishna allowed her to bind him because of her love. We'll do one more. And I'm trying to keep it simple. I'm leaving some things out that are a little more troubling. Again, hey, here's Brahma's prayers to Krishna after stealing the calves and the cowherd boys. Brahma says, you are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifested, endless, and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed. nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. So just a couple of words from this verse of Brahma. One of the words that is focused on is anantaha. Ananta, ananta means endless. So commentary makes reference to the verse that we just are discussing this evening from Damodar Lila, which goes that the Sanskrit is na cha antar na bahir. Antar means within, bahir means outside. Yasya na purvam na api chaparam. So he has no inside or outside. Nothing exists to him previously or after him. Who existed in the past and will exist in the future, inside and outside of the universe, who is the universe. Her son, Yashoda's son, appearing with a human form, though he was beyond material senses, she tied him up to the mortar like a normal child. And back to the prison house where Krishna was born, in the prison house of Kamsa. This is Devaki speaking. Oh, inaugurator of the material energy, time, which starts with seconds and ends with years, which rotates to make the lifetime of Brahma, and by which the universe moves, is said to be your movement. I surrender to the Supreme Lord, the abode of fearlessness and happiness. I'll do one more. There's many more, but I'll just do one more. All of this is to appreciate the transcendental nature of Krishna's form that Mother Yashoda is going to be binding. She didn't do it yet, but she's really determined. And initially she can't do it. You know what happened, right? She got rope and tried to put the rope around Krishna's waist, and what happened? It was short. 2 inches too short, right? Or some, 2 fingers or 2 inches. Yeah. So what did she do? She got 2 ropes and tied 2 ropes together. Tried to bind Krishna. What happened? 2 inches too short. Same 2 inches. So she got a whole bunch of ropes and tied them all together. And when she tried to bind Krishna around the waist, it was still the same 2 inches too short. She was bewildered. And her friends, the elder gopis, were saying, they were laughing at her, saying, don't you understand? It's just not meant to happen. Just accept it's not meant to happen. Just this morning, he had a little string. He tied a little string around his waist with a bell. No problem. And now you got all this rope and it's not going around his waist. That's not meant to happen. Just accept it. And her response was 2 things. Why is it always 2 inches? And the other is, I'm his mother. And if he steals and I don't check his stealing, he grows up and become a thief. I can't do that. I have to check him. I must. Don't say not meant to happen. I must. So Krishna then allowed her to bind him. But so it's a transcendental pastime to teach us some things. Love is very strong. She wasn't wanting to punish. She wanted to restrain him from these mischievous things and to have him not run away and get out harmed by some fierce jungle animals or forest animals. So now we're going to hear about the Kaviya pastime. You know that one? Kaviya. Kaviya, okay. So, at the Kaviya lake, Krishna went into the, he jumped into the lake, and Kaviya tried to bite him, and Krishna swam around and around and around and around, and he got dizzy. Finally, he got Krishna in his coils. And you know what happened after that. All the cowherd boys, they fainted. Someone went all the way back to Nandagram and told Nanda Yasoda, Krishna's in trouble. Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. Come quickly. So they came running. And they were fainting on the side of the lake. Mother Yasoda wanted to jump in the lake. Balaram stopped her. He's very strong. When Krishna saw all the distress of the resident of Vrindavan, he decided to release himself. So what did he do? He made himself big, 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 and then he got really small. And then he slipped out of the coils of the Kaliya serpent. He got on the heads of the Kaliya serpent and started dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. And the demigods were playing their musical instruments and beating on drums, and Krishna was dancing to their music. He was having a great time, dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. But because his dancing, his weight was the weight of the whole universe. So the heads of the Kaliya serpent were getting smashed and smashed. The wives of the Kaliya serpent came forward before Krishna, dancing on the hoods of a Kaliya serpent, and offered prayers. The translation reads, when Kaliya's wives saw how the serpent had become so fatigued from the excessive weight of Krishna, who carries the entire universe in his abdomen, and how Kaliya's umbrella-like hoods had been shattered by the striking of Krishna's heels, they felt great distress. With their clothing, ornaments, and hair scattered in disarray, they approached the Lord and offered prayers, beautiful prayers. And then commentary, this is now focuses on the transcendental nature of Krishna's form that has the weight of the universe. But just a little boy. Commentary says, Kaliya's wives, devotees of Krishna, were happy when he stopped beating Kaliya's head with his feet after he surrendered. They had not previously come forward because of restrictions from their wicked husband. Now that he had surrendered to the Lord, they surrendered to the Lord, who continued dancing on his head in order to induce his surrender further and to show that mercy to his wives. It was his mercy to place his foot on his head, like a lot of mercy. Paragraph. The universe is within him. This shows Krishna's power. It was said that he had no inside or outside. We've been hearing that from the Damodar Leela. No inside, no outside. The word garbha, that's in this verse, indicates everything is within him. He is spread everywhere, but he does not touch the universe. This is a Bhagavad Gita verse. Bhagavad Gita. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham tejo avastita. Nine chapter, text number 4. Krishna says, I pervade this whole universe, but My form, invisible to material senses, is invisible to material senses, since I am the cause. All entities are situated in me, since I am their cause, but I am not in them, since I am completely detached. This is the final little paragraph. Since Krishna contains the universe, what weight could he produce on Kaliya? Exclamation point. That he did not crush Kaliya completely depended on the appearance of his Ichha Shakti. He didn't want to destroy Kaliya, he wanted to give mercy to Kaliya. So by that desire, he was protected. Thus it was possible that all this could happen, since his hoods, which were like umbrellas, were broken, Kaliya's external beauty was destroyed. The wives came to the side of the Lord in great distress. Their clothing and hair were disarrayed. This indicates their pitiful condition. So there's more, but I think we're going to call it an evening. We're getting the opportunity through commentary. I was using this example the other day. It's a nice example. Over here you have Geewicks, yes? You have Geewicks? Oil?
Okay, but it's wicks.
Okay. You made them? Did you personally make them? You bought some. Okay, here's how you make ghee wicks. I've made them. You get a ball of cotton and a little bit of ghee, and not too much, and you turn it and turn it and turn it and turn it and turn it, and gets really tight, and then you got a little, nice little ghee wick that you can light, and then like here, up here, and you offer to Krishna. We do that during this whole month of Damodar. Have you been chanting the Damodar prayer in your home? You know about the prayer? Namam Ishvaram Satchit Anandarupam. Be great for your girls to learn the song. And you offer a lamp. So supposing you do it the other way around. That's what we're doing, is the other way around. We're taking that ball of cotton and fluffing it out and fluffing it out and fluffing it out. The ball of cotton is just simple little strands of cotton, squiggly strands of cotton. And then there's the cotton ball. And then you take the cotton ball, put in some ghee, and turn it and turn it and tighten it, and it becomes a ghee wick. Then you can offer it to Damodar. So we're taking a look at the transcendental nature of Krishna's form and activities, loving exchange with Mother Yashoda, looking at this strand and that strand and other strand, and we're eventually going to put them back together and hear the whole story. Remember the pastime of Damodar. I can tell you, I woke up this morning thinking of the pastime of Damodar, because I'd just been speaking about it, you know, two or three times a day. That's the ghee wick. It's the little strands put together, and you make the offering of the mind. Of course, we're very busy doing so many things, but the mind, when the mind is accustomed to hearing the glories and the qualities of Krishna, the name of Krishna, Damodar, your mind goes there. Naturally. Supposing somebody's all day long thinking about money, 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 where does their mind go when they wake up? Probably the same place when they're asleep. Or, you know, somebody has, when you have asakti, when you're attached to something, that's where your mind goes. According to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever the mind is attached to at the time of death, that state you will attain. So
So it's really important what the mind is attached to, because you don't know when you're going to leave your body. Especially during these COVID-19 times, you know, a lot of people are leaving their body before they normally would. Very unfortunate. But we don't know. It can be some other cause. Whatever the mind is fixed upon, that's where you're going. So this exercise of taking the cotton and making it into little strands, putting the strands back together, making the cotton ball, making a ghee wick, offering it to Damodar, that's what we're doing. So it's an act of devotion to Krishna. Now, it's nice just to hear the story. This is one of Radha's questions the other day. Why in the middle of this nice story we have all this philosophy? So I said, it's like making milk sweet and put some sawdust in the middle. Or put some sand in the sweet rice. And then you can't eat it because it's gritty. But it's not like that. It's helping us remember when we're trying to extend ourselves to the supreme source of everything. He's really the supreme source of everything, and he's very loving. And he likes the love of his devotees so much that he'll even be controlled by the love of his devotees. That's his nature. And Mother Jasoda's nature is she doesn't want to control him. She just has so much love for him, she controls him. And that's the pastime. Although he is what he is, he's this and that and the other thing. He is the supreme transcendental person. That is carrying everything, not just the A universe. He's carrying everything within him. Everything. Say it negatively. There isn't something that exists that isn't within Krishna. Everything that exists is within Krishna. And he has pastimes with his devotees, including dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, including being bound by the ropes of Mother Jasoda, or, as we heard at the very beginning, being bound by the rope of Radharani. You were outside, you didn't hear the Radharani story. She'll tell you later. She has a good memory. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. And Radha's first. He's always first with questions.
I have two questions.
Two questions. Okay.
My first one is, why wasn't Radha Rani invited to the party that, what's her name?
Purnamasi.
Purnamasi arranged in the Kartik month.
Why didn't Radha know?
No, why wasn't Radha Rani invited?
We have to ask Mother Jasoda. But everything, this is the why question. everything that the pure devotees do is prompted by the super soul within their heart. So it was arranged for Radharani to not be invited so that he could come late and Radharani would become angry and she would put a waistband around Krishna's waist and Krishna would smile. Say, oh, you have pleased me so much by this nice pastime for Krishna's pleasure. Radharani wasn't invited. So this other pastime could take place. Second question.
Why did Krishna want to hurt the other mother's babies, and why was the other mother's laughing about it?
He didn't want to hurt.
And why was the other...
Sometimes do you lovingly interact with your little sister, where you say or do something that's like... And you don't mean to hurt her. It's like, you know, I have been saying this in exchange with you. We've been helping her to get over saying, And she takes it very nicely. But it's out of affection that I've been doing that. So it's not hurtful. But, you know, somebody might, oh, he's picking on me, and especially in a public place. And gee, he's mean. It's affection. Look, it was affection. When Krishna was doing, wasn't hurting, really. It was affection. And it was the delight of the parents. Now, if somebody else went in and pinched their child, it would, you know, forget it, man. Get out of here and smack, and, you know. But it was because the intimacy of love, then you can go like this to your sister, and she can go like this to you. And it's, you know, it's affection. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anybody would like to discuss some point?
My question was, why do we have to give the giwiks to Krishna? What's the reason?
Well, it's not have to, but why do we? It's because everything, two things. Everything comes from Krishna. Just like incense, there's fragrances, there's flowers. So those are from Krishna. They're nice. We offer nice things to Krishna. And fire, Agni, or fire, is also one of Krishna's energies, and it's an emblem, the symbol of light, because from fire comes light. So we're offering back to Krishna fire. There may be some deeper esoteric meaning to why. It's just part of the practices, the nice things we offer to Krishna. So those are three common things. We offer some incense, we offer a lamp, and we offer a flower. We offer water. You can offer leaf. You can offer something simple. But... offering a lamp is common. Light. Krishna is light. We offer light to the source of light. Okay? You don't need a new one each time. What else? Our host or hostess, anything? Okay. Behind you?
This is from yesterday evening's class.
Yesterday?
Evening. So you were referring to Srila Prabhupada's very pure senses and how he could distinguish between fine quality difference between different offerings. So I was very inspired by that, but when I look at my own quality of services that I offer, I feel that I was chasing perfectionism earlier, but that would make me stress out. And I brought my inner expectations for myself to just do good than be perfect. So how would I, first of all, what the question is, how do I distinguish between a fine quality service versus a perfectionist mentality of doing service? And second is how I may feel less stressed about doing a very quality service. Well,
but the answer to both is rooted in bhakti, and that is, supposing someone is not really good at singing. Here's an example. There was one singer during Bhaktisiddhanta's time that he liked to hear sing. Now, Bengalis commonly can sing really nicely. It's a well-known thing. They have great voices. But not everyone has a great voice. And so one person he really, really liked, especially when there was an opportunity to hear him sing, he'd have him sing. Because he sang with devotion. He wasn't the expert singer that some of the other ones were. Some of the others are, you know, all the embellishments and refinements and this and that, but not the same bhakti. So the perfection is bhakti. And when bhakti is there, then the refinement comes. And then it's not stressful. We always want to do better or improve or let that rest upon, instead of the material competition and self-improvement and those things, doing better than the next person or matching the next person or something, competition, for the pleasure of Krishna. And that comes naturally. And when Krishna sees, then Krishna decorates. It's the bhakti principle. Let me correct your language. It's not, you want to verify your understanding. Okay. Neither of those. Can I give another option? Bhakti has that power. And bhakti, shakti, is one of Krishna's powers. So bhakti purifies, means Krishna purifies. Just like fire burns. So there may be a small spark, but that small spark that burns comes from the big fire. The small spark is an agent of the big fire. The burning capacity is from the big fire. So Krishna is the big fire. And bhakti is a shakti of Krishna that purifies. And the purification happens immediately. Just like if some, you know, a spark lands on your cloth, it's not going to take very long before there's a burn hole in your cloth. Depends on how big the spark is, too. But it burns. So bhakti purifies. And there's agents of or instruments of that purification or the instruments of bhakti. Okay. over here. No problem. Shishupal. Yes. Yes. Or Sarupya Bhakti. Both. They may. Why not? Why not? Why would you say it's not being fair? Okay, so you're equating fairness and justice as one synonymous. And is it fair that someone does something bad that they're apparently rewarded? So that doesn't seem to be just, that someone does something bad and they're rewarded. Prabhupada, if you read carefully, this topic is discussed extensively in relation to Agasura, which we just, spent some time going over with in relation to Brahma Vimohan Lila. What happens before Brahma steals is an Agasura is killed. And Krishna calls forth Agasura with his Yogamaya potency because he wants to deliver him. It's his compassion. So you look at the justice side or fairness side. Then there's the compassion side. So why did he want to deliver someone that was wicked? Because he was wicked. Death personified or evil personified. It towards him and towards others. He was a bad guy. And the demigods knew it. But he wanted to deliver him. In part, he wanted to deliver him because the demigods had made the request that he deliver destroy the demons. So destroying him, but delivering him. So then Prabhupada makes this specific point about Agasura, is that he did the slightest, like his sister Putana, they were brother-sister, she did the slightest service, but he looked at the service and accepted the service and gave her this very special reciprocation. Agasura also did some indirect, very slight service. His service was rejoining the cowherd boys with Krishna, because the cowherd boys were feeling great separation from Krishna. Not seeing him for even a moment was like too much. And Krishna was attached to them and the calves too much. So he made an arrangement so they could come together again. It was kind of indirect. Prabhupada's point, he said it three times in the Agasura story, that you can't get liberation unless there's some service. Specifically, he got Sarupya Mukti, forearm form, in Vaikuntha. Agasura? So there's a lot of discussion about that in the Agasura connection, but also in the seventh canto, because it's the same principle. So then there's extensive commentary about Shishupal and who he was in his previous two lives. When he was born as Shishupal, he was Krishna's cousin. And he was constantly chanting Krishna's name in scorn, but he was constantly chanting Krishna's name. And that's a big part of what's in that chapter. And a big part of what comes after that chapter is the power of the holy name. So in Canto 6, there's categories of indirect chanting or namabhas. You're familiar with that term? So what Shishupal was doing was a particular kind, Sanketa Namabhas. What Ajamila did is another kind of Namabhas. It was unintentional or indirect. But nonetheless, the name is so powerful. And Shishupal was constantly becoming purified by chanting his name. And it says specifically, when Krishna released the Sudarshan Chakra to kill him, he saw the effulgence of the chakra. He became finally fully purified by that light of the chakra, and that entitled him to liberation. There's pages and pages and pages, because it's an important question. It comes up in Canto 6 and comes up in Canto 7. It's the theology of the holy name. How important it is to chant the holy name, even if you're inattentive, or even if you're Shishupal or Jamyam. How important it is. So what to speak of for those who are favorable. Shishupal got mercy. He was bad. So is it fair to give mercy to somebody who's bad? Well, he was chanting. And Agasura was Putana's sister. So he got favor because he was Putana's sister. So get Putana as your sister. You'll get Krishna's mercy. Or if you become a nice Vaishnava, then your relatives get Krishna's mercy because you've done some service. However you become dear to Krishna, they become benefited spiritually because you became dear to Krishna. And it's one of the other considerations for persons who are demons. And I invite you to look at Canto 2. We've been discussing this several times. Canto 2, Chapter 7. Canto 2, Chapter... Maybe it makes Bhagavatam said here. Chapter 7, text, I think it's 34, 35. It gives a long list of persons who got liberation. And they're, a lot of them are bad guys. Demons. But they got liberation because Krishna's mercy. So he wiped clean their sinful reactions, but there's something in that Krishna connection that brought them to the point of purification and thus eligibility for liberation. In some cases, Sayuja, and some cases even Sarupya, having a form of the Lord. Like the Lord's form, forearmed form. And Putana was like top of the list. She became a maidservant of Yasoda because that little bit of service that she did. Then the message is what to speak of persons that are trying, striving, how much Krishna is appreciating and how much reciprocation will come. We have a long way to go. We're very covered entities. But Krishna is not ungrateful at all. He recognizes whatever service we've done. I'm pausing thinking of a lecture I heard Srila Prabhupada give in New York. He said, Krishna is not ungrateful. You do even the smallest service. And then his voice went up a few decibels. Even if you turn one screw, Krishna will never forget. That's his nature. He's very, very merciful. So it's not unfair to be merciful. And Radha is again enthusiastic over here. Three questions. And they all start with why, right? Okay. Wow. I'm going to tell Nichino Dupran. Okay, go ahead. Your three questions. He doesn't accept everything. If you offer something that's nasty, he won't accept it. He wasn't stressed about it. He was encouraging her. He was encouraging her refinement. It's natural affection that the spiritual master may encourage, sometimes may chastise. But it's not because he's, you know, hothead or something. It's for improvement. That's the affection. It can come in different ways. Okay. That's it. She's very clever. Next. When you're dying, you won't remember Krishna at the time of death unless you've done some things. You'll be thinking of the other things that you did instead of the devotional things. Do that stuff. There are practices that are helpful to remind you to bring the mind to Krishna. There are practices that are helpful. Like her question of the ghee lamp. It's a practice that helps one be mindful. Everything that's very nice should be offered to Krishna. Let me ask you a question. You don't want to do those things? Well, but okay. So do it for Krishna. Do the things you like to do because you like to do them. But what about the thing that Krishna likes? Well, he likes it. Some of the things you like, he likes. Some of the things you don't like, he likes. So the things that you don't like, if Krishna likes, you do. That's called service. There's a nice example of this in Nectar of Devotion. The example that Prabhupada gives, is Rupa Goswami's example, is Pradyumna. Pradyumna is Krishna's son. Pradyumna is Krishna's son. First son, son of Rukmini. First son. So Pradyumna, if he didn't want to do something but Krishna wanted, he would do that something. And the opposite. If Krishna didn't want something, he wanted something, he wouldn't do it. That's that definition is the definition of service, of in submission, of love. And even if you're not feeling so good about it, we do it anyway, if knowing that it's pleasing to Krishna. I know a little boy. He brushes his teeth every day, but there was a period of time he didn't like to brush his teeth every day. But, you know, he brushes his teeth every day because it's good for him. Even though he didn't like to brush his teeth, now he understands the importance of dental hygiene, so he brushes his teeth. So we do some things that it's not because I really like it. We do things because the mode of goodness is we do it because it's good for us. We've had this discussion before. I remember this very discussion. Different context, same point. We do things because the mode of goodness is it's good for you. And transcendence is it's pleasing to Krishna. We do things out of love because it's pleasing to the person who we love or wish to cultivate a relationship of love with. The other question? Third question. How can Krishna be attached? Yeah, of course. He's human, or he's transcendental human. So he's attached. He's not attached to something material. He's attached to something spiritual. Those who love him, he's attached to those who love him. That's natural. That's natural. Okay. Anything? No? There's online something? And then we're going to have our Bhagavatam installation. Yeah? You tolerate and move on. They'll go in time. What she's saying is not uncommon. My godbrother Sridhar Swami would speak about this from time to time, more than once. You know, songs or commercials or jingles or nursery rhymes or things that, you know, you learn when you're kids and just, where'd that come from? And, you know, it's going on and going on. It's an impression within the mind. The senses are gathering information, the sense of hearing, the sense of sight, the sense of smell, sense of touch, and those sensations make an impression in the mind. And those impressions in the mind are stored, kind of like a little file. It's, you know, very subtle and storage bank of data. And as through passage of time, those memories are prompted. They come again into the mind because it's just stored. We have to tolerate. By involving ourselves in matter, there's impressions, and we tolerate those impressions, good, bad, and mixed, and instead direct our attention as fully as possible to other impressions, transcendental impressions, like Radha knows all about arti, and taking prasadam, and things that she likes to do. And then the other thing, you make the impressions are made. Just like what we're about to do, you know, the installation of Bhagavatam, there's lots of pages there, and hearing these pages of the Bhagavatam has a transforming effect on those prior impressions. So go there, Sanchari, and that'll cleanse away these other impressions, or that they'll less be playing in your mind the melodies of worldly songs will be less have an impact because something else, they're displaced by something more attractive and something more powerful, something full of light instead of darkness. Okay. So we're going to...
The mic was off all the while. And, they're complaining they could not hear another certain thing.
Well, we cleaned it very nicely. So they can know that we're all COVID safe. Even you couldn't hear, we're safe over there. And we'll do better next time.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so let's do this. And we have a little party. Okay. You have some incense and... Okay, there I see. I see. I got it. No, you have three things. You have incense, you have the lamp. So she can watch us do the lamp and flowers. We'll offer to Krishna.